Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Bridget Bergen, WNYC and Gothamist reporter. According to the National Archives, in the last century, approximately 6 million Black people moved from the American South to northern, midwestern, and western states in what is now known as the Great Migration. They were seeking economic and social opportunities, as well as an escape from racially motivated violence, discrimination, and the legacy of slavery in the South. Black people began new lives in great cities like New York. But migration patterns have changed over the past decade. Currently, New York City is experiencing an exodus of Black people, especially Black families with children, as nearly 200,000 residents have departed in the past 20 years. This is especially noticeable in schools, as the number of Black children and teenagers has declined by 19%. And many of these families are moving to the South, signaling a reverse of the Great Migration, although less in scale. With us now is Troy Clausen, New York Times Metro Desk reporter covering education, who recently co-wrote the article, Why Black Families Are Leaving New York and What It Means for the City. Troy, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much, Bridget. It's great to be here.
And listeners, we especially want to hear from some of our Black listeners. Are you considering moving and leaving New York City? What are your reasons? Have your friends or neighbors left the city? Have you noticed a change in your neighborhood over the last 10 years? And what are those changes? Some of you who have called in the past have already moved. What circumstances led you to that decision? Where did you go? And how do you like it now? What do you miss about New York? Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692 or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Troy, let's start with the question you pose in the headline of this article. Why are Black families leaving New York City?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the reasons for any particular family who leaves can be pretty widely different. But so many of the families who we talked to focused on the idea that raising kids here and also just living here has become so expensive and such a challenge. You know, people who were in one and two bedroom apartments with two or three kids in the city who moved to some parts of the South have now become homeowners with backyards and space to park and just much, much more room in general. And I think that's a huge draw for a lot of people. I think a lot of folks have also just been excited by the potential to work in some of the nation's fastest growing cities and fastest growing Black cities in particular. Home ownership here has been really tough for a lot of Black residents, and moving to the South has allowed a lot of families to begin building the kind of generational wealth that it could help their children decades and generations later. You know, one mom who my colleague Nicole, who reported this with me, talked to, it was just so glad that she could find swim classes for her kids. And so I think there's so many different types of considerations, but for a lot of families, it did go back to economics.
New York City has lost Black population, but you note the population of the city overall has increased. What other groups are moving into the city?
Yeah, so there's been a pretty large and surprising increase in the number of Asian and Hispanic residents over the past decade. And, you know, that has shown up in a lot of these neighborhoods. You know, there's parts of Queens and Southeast Queens in particular, neighborhoods like Jamaica and St. Albans that, you know, decades ago had a really rich Black history and just a Black presence have lost Black residents over the years, and new communities are coming in. And in other areas like Bed-Stuy, it's been less of Latino and Asian residents, but just more white residents moving in. So really, it's been a big increase in those two groups.
You started to talk about some of the economic struggles that people you talked to who left the city were experiencing. Can you talk a little bit more about what ultimately led to their decision to move?
Yeah, I think for, you know, the families we talked to, they all left in the past 3 or 4 years during the pandemic. And I think that for them being in a home confined during remote learning when they themselves were working from home. I think it exacerbated a lot of the challenges that some families just were already facing. You know, a lot of these families too had for a while been thinking about making the move. They've had families in parts of the South, whether that be North Carolina or Texas or Georgia. And I think the idea was percolating for a while, but for a lot of the ones who we spoke to who've left since 2020, it was the pressures of the pandemic. And then also just the economic challenges in the city that continue to get tougher with raising rents and raising costs here that pushed them out at the particular moment that they left.
You're listening to The Brian Lehr Show. I'm Bridget Bergen in for Brian today. And we're talking with Troy Clausen, a Metro editor, a Metro reporter for The New York Times, about the exodus of Black families from New York City. And I want to go to some of our callers. Let's go to Jen in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Jen, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning, everyone. So I am a New Yorker from Brooklyn, New York in East Flatbush. And I moved down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana in 2016 as a law student attending Southern University Law Center. And I do have property in Brooklyn still, but I don't really see myself returning back to New York anytime soon due to the rising costs and just, you know, various other factors. And as I was telling the screener, I do have a 16-year-old that would like to return to attend John Jay once she graduates, but I just don't see that being feasible because of the rising costs. It's much cheaper. Everything is kind of slow paced in Louisiana, and I like it. I don't foresee us returning. Well, at least not myself.
So you've become a driver, adopted all the sort of non-city ways of living?
Yes.
Jen, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. Let's go to Kanani in Harlem.
Hi, good morning. Thank you all so much. And thank you so much for framing. You know, a lot of times we when we talk about Black issues, it's ahistorical. So thank you for framing about the Great Migration and using the term exodus, which Bob Marley also did in one of his most famous songs. So I do Black issues, right? So the intersection of our issues, and sometimes there are solutions. There is for the Blacks, as I like to joke, but also seriously say, and I'm also a diversity consultant. So I'm a government contractor in the state of Georgia. I don't want to live in Georgia. I want to stay living in New York because I do not know how to drive because I'm spoiled by being a native New Yorker. There's Confederate flags. There's a tax on curriculum. Just Florida's in the news, but trust me, because I'm a government contractor, those same attacks are also happening in Georgia for voting rights, for curriculum. You know, all of these other civil liberties are under attack when you move, quote unquote, down south, right? So the notion of sustainability, where is Black life sustainable? Is this pin a tail on the donkey? Is this just like, you know, we just throw darts? You know, why is it that the federal government cannot align, right? There was even an article in the New York Times the same day this article came out, thank you so much for writing it, about how Black people are disproportionately targeted by the IRS for auditing.
So, Kanani, I just wanted to clarify one thing because I, you know, our screener, I see, are you from Harlem and you are living in Georgia now? Is that correct?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Harlem is unsustainable. There's a lot of developers. The last segment talked about Kristen Richardson, who's fighting against these developers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of these new shiny buildings that, you know, shoot up in 9 months that, you know, like my building, $4,500 a month in rent. People are paying thousands of dollars. Wow. The elevator is out every month. Mm. So, you know, but we're still supposed to pay, you know, all this money. So where are the protections so that instead of, you know, Black people, you know, pitching a wagon, you know, a modern wagon, mm-hmm. you know, and going wherever, out west, down south, you know, to Canada, you know, there's also huge migration to Portugal because there's research internationally that Portugal is now the new hot place for African Americans to go and not be targeted. Also, Colombia. So there's this whole expatriate communities that are cropping up in support systems on Facebook and social media to welcome Black people away from America and to these other places. But I pay my federal tax dollars pay for the EEOC. 91% of cases that are filed for racial discrimination are not in any way, shape, or form done anything about. I paid taxes to New York City. What is being done with HPD to hold right. these landlords and these buildings accountable? And yet I'm supposed to just buy a plane ticket or right. buy, you know, rent a U-Haul and move my life? Like that yeah. that to me is a larger question than where, if it's the South, or, you know, should I move or should I stay? The push-pull factor should be I should be able to stay where I am, not be pushed perpetually out. That's the Black issue.
Kanani, thank you so much. And our lines are completely packed. Troy, I want to get a couple more questions to you so that we can also hear from some more callers. A large focus of your article is on Black children. You referenced the New York City census briefing, which showed that the population of Black children and teens has decreased by 19% in the last decade. What's causing the drop in population of Black children in particular?
Yeah. So one big consideration here is the birth rates for Black women are low. And while some other racial and ethnic groups have actually seen larger declines in more recent years in birth rates, it's also dropped for Black women. But it's part of this bigger issue, really, of traditional public schools in New York just facing really deep enrollment issues right now. They've lost more than 100,000 students in the past 5 years. And with that comes, you know, a loss in overall funding. That this year has led to cuts in teaching staffs and programs, but the share of Black students in particular has dropped. And, you know, my focus has been education. I'm an education reporter. And mm-hmm. part of the concern here is that predominantly Black schools in the future could see deeper challenges just as the system loses students and, you know, many of the funding dollars that follow kids. So that's a really big concern right now.
Troy, I am not exaggerating that we have so many callers with stories about how they have made this move. Let's go to Anu in Waldorf, Maryland. Anu, welcome to.
Hello.
Thanks so much for calling. So you made
You're
the move.
You're welcome. I made the move. I lived in New York for 40 years, 30 of those years, or 30 plus, were in Bed-Stuy. I found that I had to have a car because of my business. And when I first moved, I used to be able to park in front of my house or a few doors away. By the time I left, I had to park three blocks away. Hmm. And just driving around, trying to find parking was always a problem. I'm sorry, I just ran up some stairs. I'm kind of out of breath. And then the whole alternate side of the street parking was like a quality of life problem for me. Hmm. You know, sometimes not being able to sleep through the night, and then you're afraid to fall asleep because you might miss moving your car in time and get a $65, you know, ticket. The other thing that was really, horrible for me was the noise pollution. Hmm. Motorcyclists gunning their motorcycles, certain neighbors playing their music loud into the wee mornings as soon as it starts getting warm outside, things of that nature. When what I miss about New York is, number one, my friends, mm-hmm. and number two, the Park Slope Food Co-op. Food is so expensive now. Wow. I eat natural. I eat organic. And so what I realized, there's a Moms out here. I don't know if you ever heard of Moms Organic, but there's no Trader Joe's out here. Waldorf is primarily Black, and there's no Whole Foods out here. So I wow. find that those companies don't go to Black neighborhoods. And I didn't realize that in New York, because New York is so, you know, multicultural. But it's become very apparent living down here.
Anu, thank you so much for calling with your story about both what made you decide to move and what you miss. I'm going to get in one more caller before we go back to you, Troy. Let's talk to Craig in New Orleans. Craig, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Hi. Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I called in because I moved down to New Orleans during a pandemic, and without any intention of being here as long as I have been. I'm working remotely for a company in New York and am supposed to be moving back, but it's the cost of living that's just making it so prohibitive. Mm. I mean, rents have gone up at least 50 to 60% since I left 3 years ago. So the idea of trying to find a place that's affordable, that's going to eat up my salary, it just makes it so hard to come back to New York. And as a lot of other people have mentioned who called before, there are lots of things that I miss about New York, the cultural aspects, the convenience to food, the presumption that most of us take with the rights that we have in New York as, I mean, as a Black person, there's still always qualifiers to that. But when you think about education or politics, I run into so many Trump people down here that it gets frustrating, but it's a reality check. But these are the things that I miss about being in New York, but it's the cost of living. It just makes it so hard to say, yes, it's easy to come back. And so I'm in a bit of a spot trying to find a place to live to come back for my job that is essentially going to eat up my entire salary.
Craig, thank you so much for calling. I'm sure a lot of themes that we are hearing in this conversation. Troy, let's talk a little bit about some of the long and short-term consequences of, you know, when these Black families leave New York. As you talked about, you focus in on schools. What is the impact of, you know, having so few Black children in schools, particularly for the kids who remain?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's one that, you know, the system is still wrestling with. You know, there's some areas of the city, like we talked about, in parts of Southeast Queens, whereas Black students have left, more South Asian and Latino students have begun to enroll in them. But there's schools in parts of Brooklyn where hundreds of Black kids have left over, you know, even just the past 5-6 years, and really other students haven't come in large numbers. And if in the future the system begins thinking more deeply about school closures or mergers as students become more spread out, the worry from, you know, a lot of the Black parent leaders that I talk to is that their neighborhoods could be affected disproportionately just by nature of where kids aren't there anymore. And so that is a really, it's one of those things that, you know, could really reshape the system, not necessarily next year or, you know, by 2025, but just if we're thinking 2030 and long term, that's definitely going to be a big thing that has to be on the mind.
In your article, you also mentioned Mayor Eric Adams' goal to make the city more affordable in an effort to end this hemorrhaging of Black and brown families. Affordability is obviously a theme that we are hearing this morning. What is his administration doing to keep Black families in New York, and how effective are those efforts so far?
Yeah, and so the mayor has focused really heavily in his housing agenda on boosting what he calls affordable home ownership, specifically as a means to try to bridge the racial wealth gap and disparities there. And, you know, that's looked like increasing some of the programs that the city has to make home ownership both more accessible and simpler for families, but also more affordable. And they've also, you know, for the education side, made changes at schools that some education experts see as being appeals to middle-class families across the board to keep their students in the system, whether that's adding seats to the gifted and talented program and trying to make more room for Black and Latino kids, or changing admissions requirements at high schools in the city. And not all of those changes by any means are favored by all Black New Yorkers across the board, mm-hmm. but you know, on the school's ends, those are some of the things that they've tried. And now I think it still remains to be seen how much it makes an effect. You know, I think for a lot of the families that we talk to, you know, affordability was the driver, but part of it is just the challenge of being in New York. I mean, one of the callers mentioned just parking and, you know, having a parking space now. And for one of the moms my colleague talked to, that was a huge thing for her. She just mm-hmm. was tired of having to move her car all the time and really appreciated having a garage now. And yeah. those are the type of things that are fundamental to New York that, you know, the mayoral administration might not be able to change.
We have lots more callers. I want to go to Janice in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks so much for listening and calling in this morning.
Hi, good morning. First, I just wanted to say thank you for writing this article. And also thank you to the New York Times for the IRS article, because that's something that my husband and I also dealt with a lot. We were constantly being audited until we left New York. So I really appreciate just, you know, telling the Black stories. I do. Our story is a little different because we were city dwellers living in Brooklyn. And then we first moved to Westchester County before moving to the South. The reason we initially left Brooklyn is because we were pregnant and couldn't find a good option for education. We lived in a, you know, fun, you know, culturally diverse neighborhood near BAM. A lot of fun when you're single. But in terms of the school options, from talking to the kids in the neighborhood, it was like really rough. A lot of our peers were doing charter schools or lotteries, and some, you know, who could afford private did that. We didn't have that option. We don't have generational wealth. You know, we're a two-income household, but we just couldn't swing that. So we thought it would be a better option to move to the suburbs. So we moved to the suburbs, and, you know, our child went through the first 4 years of elementary school. And unfortunately, although, you know, the suburban schools are supposed to be quote-unquote better, I think there are a lot of trade-offs there. And for us, it was the self-esteem of our child, because the school had about 400 students in the elementary level. But I don't know, my daughter's grade had three Black girls, including herself, and I think two biracial Black boys. There just was not a lot of diversity. And just coming to the realization that as beautiful as Westchester was for us in terms of the visual in the house, it didn't have much else to offer for Black families, you know, in terms of like a rich experience to raise our child. And so in doing the research, what was appealing to us for Charlotte is that it's a plurality. And, you know, nothing could last forever. I find that it's like hot potato. From my childhood in New York City to now, I'm constantly moving, trying to find the best situation for a Black family to live. But for now, Charlotte, you know, I think it's about a third Black. They're Black leaders, they're white leaders, they're Indian leaders. And my daughter's school is very diverse with the staff and the students. And she's really kind of hit her stride, you know, come into her own and kind of like loving herself again and focused on school and, you know, just a healthy perspective more than she had when we were in New York.
Janice, thank you so much for your call and for that story. And Troy, I wonder if in the conversations you had with families that both had left or were thinking about leaving, if that kind of inquiry that Janice was describing about, you know, constantly searching for the right community to raise her children, to be with her family, if that's something that you heard echoed.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that for the families was such a big factor. And, you know, so many of the ones I talked to echoed a lot of the same exact points in that they just weren't sure how to navigate a school system that already, you know, high school admissions and applying to high schools in New York is often compared to like the college admissions and process, and just how complex and complicated it can be for families. But on top of that, you know, Black students here historically have had educational outcomes that are far behind their peers. And I think that was a factor that so many families who had kids who even just were in pre-K and kindergarten now were thinking about a decade down the road, and just where can I, you know, plant roots to build a family here that isn't just going to be in somewhere that's more affordable for me, but that they can also get an education and just have a life that, you know, I feel, you know, can set them up for the future.
I want to go to one more caller. Let's go to Monica in Brooklyn. Monica, it sounds like you're thinking about it.
Not really thinking about it.
You're not thinking about it. I misread my note here. I apologize.
Okay.
So tell us how you feel about how your neighborhood has changed.
Yes, yeah, so I'm just saying, good morning and thank you for allowing me. Now, from my point, I believe that the exodus of Black people living in New York is not voluntary. I believe that most of them are forced to leave, and that is what I believe. Because I lived in Bushwick from like the past 7 years. I really saw gentrification run a 400-meter race persons are moving because the buildings are purchased by persons who offer so much to the existing homeowners.
Mm.
And when these buildings are purchased and renovated, rent becomes so exuberant that you can't afford to pay. The income is already below average. And so when you can't afford to pay, you have no choice but to leave. And I think that this is one of the reasons why people are really moving, and there's this big exodus of persons from New York to other places because of rent and the increase in what it takes on there.
Monica, thank you so much for that call. And again, that idea of affordability, we keep coming back to it. Troy, thank you so much for joining me. We're going to have to leave it there for this morning.
Thank you.
Troy Clausen is a New York Times Metro Desk reporter covering education, and he just wrote this story about the recent Black exodus from New York. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Bridget.